Absolute Radio Country is filled with the best sounds from Nashville 24 hours a day. But even we can't fit in everything. You'll find a full story right here. This is Country Music Talk, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the world of country music.
We love bringing you the biggest names from the world of country music here on the podcast, so thank you for listening. Remember to subscribe if you haven't already, and that way you'll never miss an episode. And if you're in the UK, you can listen to Absolute Radio Country live and enjoy the No Repeat Guarantee. It's our promise to never play the same song twice during your workday between 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. Right, on with the podcast.
This is the Country Music Talk Podcast from Absolute Radio Country.
Kip Moore, welcome back. You're looking sun-kissed, Kip. You're looking sun-kissed.
Yeah, I don't quite, maybe, oh yeah, I was on the East Coast for about a week. It was 7-8 days straight of 80 degrees in the sun while I was at the beach. Yeah.
Are you kind of affected by, like, because some people, they don't mind the weather, like, they just get on with it. But me, like, if I wake up and it's a sunny day, that just makes a difference straight off the bat.
I would love to sit here and say that I'm got it so together that I'm not affected, but I'm drastically affected. I mean, I started back in 2017. You know, I signed a record deal in 2011 with Universal, and then by 2012, my first song was popping, and it was just nonstop. I was already on the road, though. CAA had me on the road in all of 2010 and 11 before I had a record deal. So right. I'd already been touring hard, but then it was like 200 shows a year at that point.
Right.
For literally 5 straight years, it was. I don't remember anything in the first 5 years of my career, like truly.
And
was
even
a blackout.
If in the middle of that, you've got like a day off to travel or something, you're still not off.
You're not off.
Yeah.
You're never off because I was also having to write Wild Ones.
Right.
So I was trying to find pockets to write the second record while I literally did that. Like, I remember in 2013, I had 150 headlining shows. And then I had all the radio stuff.
Right.
So I was on Red Eyes every night. And then I had a bunch of opening slots. So I did like 200 plus shows that year. So 2017 rolled around. I remember telling my manager, I said, hey, look, I'm not touring year round anymore. I'm going to start taking off January and February, mid-December to the end of February. I don't want to be in the wintertime stuff constantly touring and in Nashville. I said, I'm going to go surf. I'm going to shut down for a minute because I'm going to lose my mind if I don't do something about this. But, yeah, for me, you know, the winters I spent even in Nashville, that's not even that extreme, but it's just so cold and gray.
Yeah.
I can kind of do cold when there's, like, mountains and snow and I can snowboard or something. But
yes.
Just cold and gray and wet and that sloshy snow everywhere.
Gray snow.
Man, it's just it's hard to fight that that thing that jumps on your back, you know, and pulls you in the dark when it's like that.
I know, I agree with you. I do think, though, like, having known you for a while now, it seems like you've got kind of a good balance going on because, you know, you get to be selective about what you do now, which is a real privilege.
Yeah.
I think one time we were doing a Zoom, and here I was in grey old London, and I was Zooming you, I think, in Hawaii. And was it? Could it have been Hawaii?
Easily could have been that.
I don't know. And you hopped on the Zoom with your hair still wet. Having just got out of the ocean surfing, and I thought, well, you got to rub it in, don't you, Kit Moore? Hello, welcome.
Yeah, man. I mean, that was. I'll tell you this, Baylen. I remember when I first decided to do that. When I put my foot down, I was like, I realized that I had a little control in my career. I was like, I ain't doing this no more. Like, this is gonna kill me. And I literally was teetering, without going too heady on you this time of day. I was teetering on a madness level in 2015, I would say. Like, I was really, really dark during that time. And that's a whole nother conversation probably for off the air between us because it got really, really heavy and I experienced some really wild stuff in my life at that time. And I was teetering on a place that was, it was dangerous. And I remember when I decided I was going to do it in 2017, I remember 2 days into my trip, I'm having coffee. And I just got done surfing all morning. I was like, oh, my gosh, this is amazing. I was having coffee like 10 o'clock. I'd already surfed for 3 hours. I'm sitting in a little cafe by myself, not talking, which was great, and reading. And I got a call, and it was like, you know, I know you're on your break, but we've just been offered this halftime performance at the AFC Championship, which is, you know, millions and millions of people watching
that
game.
Yeah, big deal.
And I thought about it for about 3 seconds. I just kind of stopped and I thought about it, and I thought about everything I've worked for in my life to get to where I'm at. And, you know, I remember living in that garage apartment for a couple years, and between 27 and 29 years old. And I was having all those conversations in your head where that thing jumps on your back. It's like, you're a loser. You haven't accomplished anything. You're living on in a little garage apartment with a mattress on the floor. You know, it was all that stuff. And then it was like, you know, but I was grinding, working all these odd jobs, working the, you know, as a songwriter, you know, for this publishing company, you know, driving that little four-cylinder Nissan truck that was on its last leg that already had transmission fallout in. And I'm, you know, all those things. And you're just feeling what the world tells you, you're a loser at that time, you know. And now here I was being offered this thing, and there was a part of me that was like, in that 3 seconds of like, am I ungrateful? But I knew that that wasn't the case. And I said, you know, well, there's a problem. I'm having coffee right now. That was my answer. And it was just, I could feel the tension on the end of the line. Like, hang on, what'd you just say? I said, well, I'm having coffee. I'm not going to make it. I said, well, I'm not really following what you're telling me, but, you know, you would need to be here. It was kind of like what I said didn't register.
Right.
It was like, you need to be here, you know, by Friday, and it's like a Tuesday. We'll get the band, we'll fly up, you know. I said, yeah, there's a problem, though. I'll probably be having coffee. And so it was just kind of, did you hear the number that was offered to you to go do this? And I'm like, yeah, I heard it. I said, but there'll always be a carrot. The carrot's going to always be there. And hung up, didn't, you know, I could feel the frustration.
It's because they wouldn't even imagine, the people wouldn't even imagine that there would be a no to something like that.
Got a call the very next, 2 days later. It was like 48 hours later, got a call. I was like, well, they've upped it 50. You still want to say no? And it was the biggest payday I'd ever heard of and the biggest look I'd ever had in my career. And I thought to myself once again in 3 seconds, if I say yes, it's never going to end. I'm going to always keep coming back for something. I got to draw the line. I got to draw a line in the sand somewhere. And I said, well, there's a problem. I'm still having coffee right now at that same cafe. And it was like, whatever, you know, and we got a phone.
Yeah.
And I never got a call again for, you know, when I'm on my winter break. And that was just kind of it.
Isn't it just as important? And it takes a while to realize this for a lot of people. And some people never realize it. It's just important what you say no to is what you say yes to.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. I said no to, the year before that, I think it was 2016. There was a conversation brought up about me doing a collab at the ACMs with a very famous pop singer.
Okay.
And I have nothing against the pop singer, what they do. I dig what they do. But it just felt contrived and forced, and it felt like this whole, like, game of politics to me, and we'll get you on the show, but you got to do this, and
right.
Or whatever it is. And it just... it didn't feel right to me. It didn't feel like it mixed with what I do at all. And I feel like, you know, I just didn't want to do my career where I'm grasping at straws to just try to pander to whatever door that opens. I've always tried my best to stay, you know, if it had been a collab with Seeger at a piano and
right.
I'm on a guitar, I'm in. It makes sense with what I do, you know, but it was just like, nah, this just doesn't make sense to me.
It's really admirable that. I mean, I'm sad we don't have a Lady Gaga, Kit Moore collaboration as a result of that.
Hey,
but.
I love Lady Gaga. Love Lady Gaga.
Who doesn't? Well, I'm glad you said yes to coming in to have a little chat with us. It's good to see you because I think the last time that we saw each other, it must have been when you were doing Highways, when you headlined Highways.
Yeah.
The very
2 years
first
ago.
One ever. Yeah, it was the last time I saw you. And, before that, I guess it was The Long Road. And in between that time, or maybe right around Highways, you became a megastar in South Africa,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, everybody's been buzzing about that ever since it happened. And what a thing to do, and what a great thing for country music as well, to go into territories and really do what you do and have it be received so well to a massive, massive audience.
Mm-hmm.
And it just must feel good and gratifying to know that you can kind of carve your own path these days? Because, you know, you were talking about that thing that gets on your shoulder. And the thing about that thing, I don't know about for you, but that thing can get on your shoulder when everything's going great as
well.
Oh, man. You know?
Well, I can walk off the stage and just, I mean, I recently, you know, had a sold out arena in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And the show was on fire. And for whatever reason, late at night, I spiraled after the show. Don't even know why. You know, it's
That's the thing. That's the thing. There is no reason why, right? Usually, it's just how it works, and kind of recognizing that you aren't your feelings. Again, not to get too deep about this, but I mean, I get this. Like, do you meditate? Are you a meditator?
You know, this is what's so fascinating about that question. Meditation and prayer, two things.
Yeah.
And I've always been a believer, and I don't sit here and try to, you know, if people want to have a conversation with me about what I do believe and this and that, like I'm all in, and I have no answers in life and this and that, but at the core of me, I do have a faith.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I pray, whenever I meditate, and usually those two things coincide,
mm-hmm.
I had a stretch of about 6 months where I was really diligent, where every morning I woke up because I was trying to pull myself out of that dark.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to make it a point to wake up really, really early before I want to go work out, before all this stuff happens, and sit and meditate and pray. And more of just a place of trying to stay grateful for things because I have so much to be grateful for. During that span, man, I felt so incredible. I felt the best I've ever felt. And it's so funny how I go through these ebbs and flows. And when I am in that, I feel more grounded. I feel more connected. It all seems to make more sense. And I'll still shove it to the side, which is a fascinating thing that we all do as humans. It's like, yes, the answer is I do that at times. I don't do it enough because I know how important it is.
Yeah, no, I get that. I mean, I try and meditate every day. And you know what ends up happening? Because the way my brain works, if I miss a day or I don't do it long enough one day or something, then that becomes its own reason to beat myself up about something. Isn't that a weird thing? You're doing this thing to, like, try and make yourself feel better and, you know, just get through life. And then you can't forgive yourself for not
doing
something.
And then you kind of feel guilty and then you don't. It's almost kind of like making yourself go to the gym. You get in a routine and you miss a couple days.
Yeah.
And then it just starts to kind of fall by the wayside. It's the same thing with everything, you know?
Yeah.
You start rationalizing things in your life that are important and not important and all these things. And we get so convoluted with all that stuff that's,
It's just, we're just here talking about life with Kit Moore. We should probably talk about music, I guess.
Man, we can do whatever you want to do, man.
No, I really enjoy, it's always good to talk to you about stuff and catch up in that way. But, you know, we're sitting here in a building with a big old antenna on the top, so we should probably talk about.
Well, you've always been very good at making this a conversation, which is what I always appreciate and enjoy, because it is not always that way.
Well, you make it easy. You know, I always enjoy talking to you, but we also love your music as well, in addition to loving you as a person. We love the music, and the great thing is you're over here. Well, you're doing you're doing a run in Europe before you come back to the UK. So you're in the UK now, and then 30th of May, you kick off in Birmingham. You got Leeds, Belfast, Newcastle, Glasgow, London, Manchester. It always seems like there's a real love affair with the UK, between you and the UK.
Well, it's a pure love affair because I have not been one of those artists that has been in the mainstream success light very much. I've had my moments, but it's mainly been this really kind of groundswell of people being like, you got to go see this show. You got to go see this show. You got to get this on. You got to get, you know, so it's been passed around. And the early record was really the only record I had that was in that commercial light.
Yeah.
Everything else has kind of been drifting. You know, you take a song like The Bull, which is probably
one of my favorite songs.
It's probably That Was Us, I would say, are my two biggest songs. When you go to a show, and neither one of those songs were ever commercial songs.
Yeah.
So that's a fascinating thing to me. As big as Truck was commercially, and it's still massive.
Still hear it. You know, I'm in this. We play it all the time.
Yeah.
I'm still in the States. Turn on the country radio, and it pops up there as well. It's coming up to 15 years, right?
I guess so. 2012. So, but I mean, it's not what the Bull what is in concert. It's just not. And Heart's Desire, which has now been, you know, number one over in South Africa and stuff, it's that song is now what I always knew it was going to be, which was from the Wild Ones record. I mean, that song is now massive in Australia. And it's that thing where all they got to hear is those first two bars. Do-do-do, do-do-do. And it's just, place goes bananas. And it's, you know, that's probably the most visceral, you know, lightning bolt connection with the audience as far as us playing that in South Africa that I've ever had as an artist. So it's neat to see these songs that through time and this fan base, yeah, it's just a true, it's not a here's a flavor of the month artist that's coming through. It's like, yeah, we've been building this for years and years and years. So there's a deep appreciation, not only for me coming here and to see this show, but they know that I appreciate them. It's a love affair between the two, and yeah, you feel it. Like, it's a very palatable thing.
Oh, you absolutely feel it. I mean, I've seen you many times here in the UK. I've seen you in the States as well, but there is something special about you in a room with a bunch of people here, because there really is an energy to it. And we've talked before, we don't need to get into it to it now, but like the actual, you know, business sacrifices that you made to kind of build here, because it really is a commitment to come over here and build. And we know that, but hopefully justly rewarded by the love that you feel.
Yes.
When you are here. And then doing that same thing like in South Africa now, right? And I mean, that's probably even in terms of numbers, many times the size of the UK, right?
The difference between what happened here in South Africa is this was a very slow organic swell here.
Yes.
So the amount of money that I lost in the beginning coming here was catastrophic to try to make this tour go. Even with we had that first tour was a sold out club run of about 1,000 seats kind of thing, 800 to 1,000 seats. Mm-hmm. And I could already see that it was sold out, you know, so I'm like, oh man, this is going to be amazing. And then I, you know, my accountant says, well, you're actually going to lose this much. And I was just like, you got to be kidding me to go do this, you know? So it's betting on yourself. But South Africa, because of that radio station that's the biggest station in South Africa, spinning Heart's Desire so much, and If I Was Your Lover was a massive hit there. There's one other one that was a really big hit there. So I had like three massive hits there before I got there. So there was already...
And you had never been there before.
Two
that,
nights
right?
in a sold-out arena and a football stadium waiting. Yeah. So I didn't lose anything when I went there. So that was the difference with that.
Yeah, you didn't exactly lose your shirt when you came over here, but you couldn't afford sleeves. I remember that.
Yeah. I still can't. I got them on the day, but that doesn't mean they'll be there by the show.
I know.
Oh, man, that was good.
Kit Moore is in studio with us. The new album is Solitary Tracks. And Bad Spot's the one we're loving at the moment, right?
I mean, I hope you are.
Yeah, we're loving it. We're loving it. So we should play it. Tell us about it before we do.
Oh, Bad Spot. You know, this is one of those things that for me, there was so much about this record that was opening the closet, looking at the wreckage, trying to look in the mirror at the role you played in it as myself.
That's hard work, that.
Oh, man. Yeah, nobody wants to really see who they are.
I guess it's hard work in the short term, right? But it's harder work in the long term if you don't do it.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. And I feel like for me, it's always, I compartmentalize everything because I'm trying to just hang on for dear life when I'm in a tour because I'm so exhausted. And it's at the end of that tour, it was just looking at all the wreckage in my life and trying to make peace with it, trying to say forgiveness, ask for forgiveness, trying to give grace and forgiveness to people that I've held grudges with. Mm-hmm. And I think with Bad Spot, it was, you know, another message on this record of being an interesting way to say, I've opened that closet. I know the part that I played, and I think I can do it better this time around. And that's the message in the song.
All right, let's have a listen to it. We'll have more chat with Kip from the new album, Solitary Tracks. This is Bad Spot on Absolute Radio Country. Kip, when you get off tour, do you take a minute or do you head right? I know, you know, we've talked about self-preservation and kind of taking time for yourself and stuff like that. But do you find, because sometimes when you have something rolling along, it's just easier to keep it rolling than it is to bring it to a stop for a moment, even if it's better for you personally or your mental health or something. So when you're doing something like this and you've done a run of dates in Europe and then you do this run in the UK, what do you do after that? Do you head straight into something else? Because we're getting into busy season, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm a little bit of a detriment to myself in that sense of I love, and these are all things I've been processing over the last few years, is my love for music, and I've been this way since I've been a kid, but even now more so, I would say, it's almost a problem where I don't know how to escape all the stuff that's in my head 24/7, and the minute I get back, you know, just here recently, almost every little 2 days I was back or whatever, I'm in the studio from early morning till late at night working on a new record already. I'm already working on something that's going to be completely different than this record.
Okay.
And then I get really jazzed about it because we're experimenting and trying all these different wild things. And but, you know, that is what I love to do, but I end up kind of hemorrhaging. There's pieces of my life that I've been trying to kind of hold on to, and my grip's getting weak, and then it starts to hemorrhage out, and then it's detriment to other things in my life.
Sure,
because
yeah.
I don't know how to balance well, which kind of goes to what we were talking about before we cut on the mics is, you know, I'm coming to that place of understanding, no time super soon, but I think there's going to have to be a decision with me, because I know I've been around other artists. I know I'm not like other artists. There's a different involvement that I have with my career than other artists, where they can step aside and go live normal lives here, and they've got a team of people doing all these things over here, writing the music, doing all this. Like, I'm so hands-on with every single aspect, and that's not going to change, so I'm going to have to make a decision to water other gardens in my life that I've just neglected for the longest time that I want to water. And
but when you give so much to one thing, I mean, it is hard to... You know, it's not even necessarily about spreading yourself too thin. It's about, like, I'm giving my all from this part of my brain to this thing.
Yeah.
And then I'll put that down for a minute and do this other thing.
Well, you just said it. I can't do the minute thing.
Right.
And so what I'm realizing about myself is I don't know how, and I don't want to. I think about it like this. When I was recently in Costa Rica surfing, every single morning that I woke up, every morning, and I do this every morning, I write. And 90% of the time, it's going to be something I'm going to throw away.
You write songs or you like journal?
Everything.
Right, okay.
Everything. I'll write a full song lyric without any instrument in hand.
Right.
And then I'll see what that lyric is when I start playing around with it. Or I'm on a guitar doing riffs, and then I'm spitfiring lyrics and things and stuff that comes to mind. And sometimes that'll turn into 3 hours. Sometimes that'll be 10 minutes and I'll come back to it through the day and I'll keep chomping on it. But I think about everything that I'm recording right now, almost everything started while I was there. Almost all those ideas were born there. And so I start thinking about, because I'm so in it 24/7, and I'm thinking about it when I get home at night, even from surfing and doing this and that, I'm up writing for the next 4 hours. I had to go through 100 ideas to get to those 10 that were magical. And if I'm waking up, and let's just pretend I've got a kid and I've got a wife and I got things, and I got things that I want to be around and be present for, little by little, all that other stuff starts to fade. And now I've only jotted down 5 ideas in the span of a month. And if I've only got 5, there might not be any of them that are really great.
Yeah.
But you got to write 100 to get to 5 good ones.
Right.
So that's kind of how I've always seen it. So when you think about your favorite artists and bands that were a rocket ship at the beginning of their career, and then it just starts to fall by the wayside, well, all of a sudden, you start to sleep in satin sheets, and now you got a family, now you got your Lamborghini, and you got all this stuff, and then the music just starts to fall by the wayside. Well, for me, I've been an alley cat through this whole thing. So I've never turned into a house cat, so I feel like the music is getting better and better. And even the fans that have this record, it's kind of been unequivocally like most every record fan that stopped me, even the meet and greet VIP after a show, before a show, this is my favorite record you've ever done. This surpassed Wild Ones for me. And what I'm even doing now that I'm recording is I know as a writer is hands down the best I've done. But I've been so invested, even every day that I wake up on tour, I've been writing and writing and writing. And when I'm back home on the East Coast, I'm writing and writing and writing. Mm. So, but I'm aware that I don't know how to do it any other way. So there's going to have to be a defining line for me in my life.
I got you.
Yeah.
I still think you should treat yourself to some satin sheets. They're real nice. They're great.
Man, I love how that's the nugget that you pulled out of that right there.
I took it all in. I'm just saying I want you to treat yourself because you deserve it.
I got you.
Just before I let you go, real quick, I was in the, we talked about all this international stuff that you've been doing and how it pays off in various ways. In one way, I think it was last year, I was in the corner eating a pulled pork barbecue sandwich at a CMA luncheon, and there's Kit Moore getting the CMA International Artist Award. That was last year, right?
Yeah,
was that
it was.
Last year? Yeah,
it
and was. You know, I thought that was so special because obviously getting any sort of recognition, I know it's not the goal, mm-hmm. but getting any sort of recognition is lovely. But that one in particular, you know, you're not, it's not on stage at a big fancy pants awards thing. It's amongst your colleagues, your friends, the people that worked with you to make it happen, the people that are mm-hmm. so invested in you and your success. And as I mentioned, there's barbecue, so that makes everything better. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like a really special moment to be in that room.
It was. It was for me, for sure. And it was that award truly was not, it was for me, and I felt a part of it. But, you know, there really were so many people involved with that award. And I even think about, I've got Courtney over here, that was my publicist at the time. Mm-hmm. And I think about Courtney and Sean and Jenny and Nigel and Mark and all these people that kept trying to put the pieces together. They knew how much I wanted to build it over here, and it's not easy. And the people that do all the logistics and the people that set up interviews and all those building blocks. And then, you know, everybody kind of being in the room at that time. And now it's, you know, I think about, you know, Courtney and Gaines and people that are back in Nashville to constantly even make this tour work. There's a lot that goes into it. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't, that was what was neat about that award.
Yeah, no, it was a lovely thing. It takes a village and all that, doesn't it? But it truly does. And you see that, it was really obvious in the room. 100 years of the Grand Ole Opry this year. It's a big deal. Do you remember the first time you performed at the Opry?
Oh, yeah, man, I blacked out.
Did you?
I don't remember anything about it, to be honest.
That's one way to make an impact.
Yeah,
Kit Moore blacks out on stage.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like I blacked out. Like, I really did. I remember getting back to the dressing room and being like, I can't even remember what I played, and I don't know if I played it correctly. It was just that room and the Ryman, they're the only, when I walk on a stage, there's such a, it's a place of, I'm so comfortable. Mm. It doesn't matter how big the audience is, I'm comfortable, but that place just freaks me out. And it still kind of does to this day. You hear a pin drop, you know, in that room. And the way I always do it, too, is, which is, I'm thinking about it as we speak. Maybe I should do it differently, but I do it acoustic. So it's even more so, there's nothing to hide behind.
Yeah.
So maybe I should just start doing it with the band and kind of just walk out.
Get right the square dancers out there.
Right as I'm about to sing. Right, so I'm about to sing and do it that way.
If you feel like you're about to black out, just get them square dancers out there. It'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, it's always a pleasure, Kit.
Always.
Thank you for coming to see us.
Always, buddy.
The album is Solitary Tracks. We're loving Bad Spot. We're loving the whole album, to be honest with you. We'll be playing loads from it. The UK tour kicks off 30th of May in Birmingham and then coming to Leeds, Belfast, Newcastle, Glasgow, London, and Manchester. Kit.
Hey, doing the Brixton, which has been my all-time bucket list.
I cannot tell you how excited I am that you're doing that, because that is within walking distance of my house.
Buddy, that is a legendary room.
It is amazing.
I was kind of, you know, we need to do the Apollo. And I said, look, I love the Apollo. I think it's Apollo. I want to do the Brixton so bad. They were like, we just don't know if any country fans are going to come to the Brixton. I said, they'll come.
They're going to come.
They're going to come.
Build it, they will come. It's such a great room, a legendary room, Brixton Academy. And, you know, I can like I said, I'm just going to walk down the road and then sit down and not have to travel across the whole of London.
Well,
so thank you so
much. Come have
a
beer before the show, please.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, listen, go enjoy the sunshine. Get yourself some satin sheets.
No.
The Country Music Talk Podcast from Absolute Radio Country.
An in-depth look behind the scenes at the world of country music.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. We'll have another dropping soon for y'all, so don't forget to keep it country.
If you enjoy the Country Music Talk podcast, chances are you'll also enjoy Absolute Radio Country. It's the place where real music matters, and we love country music just as much as you do. You'll find us online on the free Absolute Radio app, on digital radio throughout the UK, or just ask your smart speaker to play Absolute Radio Country.